Welcome to the Jeremiah Patterson Show, and thank you for joining me tonight. Excuse my voice. It is raspy, it is nasal, it is all the things a voice could be because, of course, I'm a little sick, but we are going to get through this tonight because it is a special report. I'm returning not on the basis of necessarily good news, because what has just happened and what we are covering tonight is completely devastating. It was 2 weeks ago that the deadliest wildfire in U.S. history engulfed Hawaii. It wasn't since 1881 during the Thumb wildfire that a death toll has reached the high of 282. With ambiguous reports, the death toll of the Hawaii fires could quantifiably precede that, but as of right now, and as I'm recording this, 115 people have been declared dead, and over 1,000 are still missing. Wildfires are not uncommon in Hawaii. It's expected, but this was certainly worse. The fires were expedited by unbearably strong and destructive winds of Hurricane Dora, which did not hit the island, but they got the brunt of those winds there. The powerful winds were the reason that this fire was able to spread so fast and so far, destroying everything in its path. Thousands of people were forced to evacuate from their homes. We're actually going to be speaking with an acclaimed producer who survived the Maui wildfire, and he says he'll never forget how close the fire came to his front door. Once again, that interview is coming up here on the Jeremiah Patterson Show. And, you know, it is just a remarkable story. It is a remarkable story of tenacity and resilience with a frontline perspective on what happened in Maui. And when it came to evacuating, many people were stuck in a long line of cars. Others straight up just abandoned their cars as the fire got too close. And also many people were trapped inside their vehicles due to the flames becoming so intense and so ferocious that it engulfed the entire vehicle and everyone inside of it. Times Radio out of the UK did an interview with the reporter for Hawaii News Now, and it was just completely heartbreaking. This is a live, real story on essentially him explaining to this Times Radio podcast, you know, reporter out of the UK, essentially the experience of one of his reporters.
One of our reporters at our news organization found that he had three family members that were in a car and they couldn't get out and they were surrounded by the flames. And that's where they spent their last moments. Two adults and a child. And that's related directly to one of our reporters. So that reverberates throughout the newsroom. One of our reporters comes from, several of them come from Maui, and so we're on the island of Oahu, the capital city, and they have gone over, those that are from Maui, to Maui because they know the people, they know the places, and they can report on those things. However, for them, it's hard because it's their families that are directly affected.
Once again, that was an interview reporting from Times Radio out of the UK. A Hawaii family trapped in their car. Quote, they spent their last moments trapped in the car. You can hear in that reporter's voice just the hurt and the anguish at just visualizing and recalling that story from one of his colleagues. Two adults and a child. Completely, completely heartbreaking. 38-year-old Cuevas Reyes told Hawaii News Now that if things got any worse for her, quote, I would have had to tell my children to jump into the ocean as well and be boiled alive by the flames, or we could just died from smoke inhalation and roasted in the car, end quote. And she is not being hyperbolic there, because many people were jumping in the ocean. Hospitals were becoming overfilled. The fires were becoming so enlarged and so engulfed around multiple areas, multiple locations, that people were having to jump in the ocean as the only form of salvation left to survive. Among the parts of Hawaii that is just greatly, greatly damaged and completely just destroyed and eradicated, and it almost looks unrecognizable, is Lahaina. It is a beautiful, beautiful celestial village. celestial place. And if you search up pictures of Lahaina from then versus now, it's almost like an eerie, horrific, terrifying comparison. As I said, again, a producer is going to be coming on our show in a couple of minutes. He's going to be joining us very, very soon. That is coming up. But I was talking to him earlier today, and what I was start and astonished to learn is that according to Maui city officials, it's going to take up to 4 to 5 years to have full recovery of what happened there. I mean, just completely devastating. The wildfires, yes, they hit Maui, but they also hit Lahaina as well. And the damage is completely, completely overwhelming. We're going to have special reporting on that on the Jeremiah Patterson Show in the days ahead, especially because we are pursuing an active special report out of Hawaii and trying to get contacts on the show to tell their stories. But the guest that we have tonight to tell his story is an acclaimed producer. His name is Brad Starks. He is an incredibly accomplished individual. He grew up in Rockford, Illinois, and he has held many different positions over the years, including fashion photographer, creative director, filmmaker, producer, and currently an actor based in Maui. Mr. Starks has operated studios in New York, Chicago, Madrid, Spain, and Tokyo. During his work as a fashion photographer, he had the pleasure of working with fashion icons like Nicole Miller and Oscar de la Renta, along with Emmanuel Ungaro. I mean, if you just take a look at it, it's a very impressive career across the map. With his works published in Vogue, GQ, Vanity Fair, and more, he worked on the sets of The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, HGTV's Hawaii Life, and on networks like A&E and MTV. Mr. Stark has been living in Hawaii for years, and when the wildfires began, he was there. It was unlike anything he'd ever seen before. He says he'll never forget how close the fire came to his front door. Joining me now for the interview on the Jeremiah Patterson Show tonight is acclaimed producer and filmmaker, Mr. Brad Starks. Mr. Starks, thank you so very much for coming on the show. When did you first become aware of the wildfires?
Let's see. On the day... myself and my cast and crew of our television show, Moku Moku, we were in an area of Maui called Haiku. And sort of like towards, like going sort of like toward like the north side of the island. At that time, we were getting notifications on our phones that there were wildfires that were occurring. However, wildfires, like when you live here on the island of Maui, wildfires are kind of like a seasonal thing that is a normal everyday thing. Now, what was different about this was that the Dora hurricane had missed us and passed south of us. However, the winds that we got from that were incredibly severe, and we didn't until sort of like the end of our workday, we didn't realize how bad it had gotten. And there were wildfires in sort of like the central area of Maui, Kihei. There were fires in the upcountry area, Olinda, and kind of like in areas of Kula, where my home is. And then obviously the most severe, I mean, what turned out to be the most severe was over in Lahaina. And maybe about, I mean, you'd have to do like a Google search, but I believe like 3 years ago, we had a really, really, really bad situation over in Lahaina before. And a lot of the residential homes were in danger. And I think they did lose some during that, but it was very difficult to stop even then. So that was basically how we found about it, out about it on the day.
Mm. You said on your Instagram that you'll never forget how close the fire had came to your front door. You took one picture of the scene and then you left your home. What was going through your head at the time?
Wow. Once I came to the realization that I was going to need to try to fill my car with everything I needed to kind of like start over from scratch again. I don't know how to really kind of describe that, because I felt the urgency of the moment in that, you know, I needed to take action so that I could continue my life. But it was just sort of like a moment of zen. It's really strange to describe. I mean, I've read stories and I've heard of accounts of people who have been in like survival situations where you literally you come to terms with the fact of a hard fact, and then you fully invest your mind and you focus on what it is you have to do. So I was able to fly a drone and sort of see how fast the flames were coming, but I knew enough to know not to underestimate how fast a 60 or a 70 mile an hour wind can move a fire. And yeah, I was not going to find out by just chilling. Oh, you know, let me watch a rerun of Dynasty. You know, oh, I'm sure. Is it there yet? Oh, well, okay. I guess I got to go. No, but I took that last picture. And once I drove away, I was just like, you know, well, at least I have a place that I'm going to. And I mean, I sought shelter in our hero house that we have, which is in an area called Makawao, which is again upcountry. It's maybe like a 20 minute drive from like where I live. And I slept, well, I didn't sleep that much that night, but I just spent the night on the couch at the house where we shoot our TV series. But the following morning, once we sort of rallied our cast and crew, it was more than obvious that we, you know, our entire island was in a state of emergency, and we just pivoted. We were like, let's suspend shooting. I mean, like we had like another 2 weeks left to shoot, but we suspended all production on our show, and we turned our hero house. And then we also have like a huge barn type loft that's also on the property. We turned that into a donation center. And we started to take in donations from everyone. We found out where all of the shelters were, and we just mobilized that effort. And our cast and crew, I mean, we're still doing that to this day. 25 minutes before I've met with you, there's a friend of mine who has a great restaurant called the Empanada Lady. And what she's doing is she's cooking free meals for first responders and all of the firefighters. But there's no one coming into the restaurant because, you know, everybody is displaced. There are people who are still looking for loved ones. There are a small amount of tourists that are still here, but it's not enough to keep her business open. So what I'm doing is I go out, I buy the food that she makes. I also buy sort of like all the materials and things that she needs to make all of that stuff transportable to get all the way over to the west side. It's about an hour and a half, maybe like 2 hour drive to get over there, where there are just people who are still working nonstop to recover loved ones, to sort of like make sure that hot areas of the fire that have been put out don't flame up again. So that's pretty much kind of like what's been going on like the last week and a half.
As you said, there definitely is this community effort with everyone sort of like coming together and making efforts to make sure that everyone is okay, because you actually were working on and, you know, filming and producing season one of this TV show, which focuses on, you know, three close friends living in upcountry Maui and has, you know, comedy and daily life intertwined. And from what I'm hearing, this appears to have been sort of like a team decision to like stop production so everyone could come together. I wanted to ask you, how did you all arrive at that decision? And like, what is the community outreach like right now?
Yeah. Well, in answer to your first question, I mean, three of our cast and crew members who live in Lahaina lost everything. On that day, they were trying desperately to get back to the west side once we finished work. but the roads were closed because the fire was still actively just completely vaporizing all of Front Street, Lahaina. So we knew immediately, like, you know, when these guys were sleeping like in their car all night and there was just no hope for that road to open up, we knew we couldn't just stand by and just do nothing. So the idea of the show, as you say, it's about three friends, you know, who care very dearly about each other. And we've been shooting this for an entire year, and the community support and the outreach to our, you know, of our efforts have just been mind blowing. And it's been statewide. So it's been like a fantastic thing. If you put it into a word, that word is aloha. Now, what does that mean? Well, I mean, everyone, you know, hello and goodbye. And, you know, if you've lived here for about 3 years and you go back and forth between here and the mainland, there's a very generic kind of understanding of what the culture is like here. I mean, there's a stereotypical idea of, you know, we all live on the beach. Everybody has a Mai Tai. Women run around wearing coconut bras and lace skirts. You know, it's this kind of stereotype that's based on a very colonialistic sort of mindset of wealthy white foreigners who come here and, you know, they do what they want and then they leave. There's usually no introspection or there's no investigation or curiosity of what the indigenous people's lives are like here. So we wanted to make a comedy that made comment on that. And I'll explain it this way. So the roads were closed. There was no driving in and out. And let me be specific about this. When you live on an island, to get to the west side where Lahaina was, there's only one highway that goes that way. So there's one lane that goes that way. There's one lane that comes out. If that shut down, there is no way to get there. So what did we as a community do? Well, people have boats. People have jet skis. Everyone started to mobilize that effort. You start to call up Timmy. Hey, Tim. Hey, man, we're trying to get some water over to the other side. We don't know where we're going to sort of dock up, but come by, you know, let's get you filled up with some gas. Let's give you a reserve. And we're going to meet some guys at Costco. And then we're going to meet you at the dock. And then we're going to load you up and off you go. People here, it's a fishing community. Obviously you have a lot of surfers. You have a lot of professional watermen who live here. So they know how to circumnavigate those waters and know how to conduct themselves during emergencies. So, and then besides that, it's a community that just cares about each other. Aloha is a real thing. The best way I would describe how people conduct themselves here, they believe in a true connection. So if you're on the mainland, you're on a bus, you ask, hey, man, how you doing? Okay, fine. And then it's very surface here. Hey, bro, how you doing? What you do? Mm-hmm. You know, where you stay? You know, how's it? People have a way in which they connect and they speak to you, not at you.
Mm. Wow, that is a very, very powerful, definitely like a different approach than what you often see portrayed, as you said, from the colonialistic perspective. On that point, I would just say, are there any stories or anything that you have seen from this recently, you know, terrifying disaster that has, you know, deeply impacted you?
I heard of any story. There's one story that I am really, really looking forward to hearing about, and I'll tell you. And, you know, our daily operation sort of stem from a central location in Makawao. where we bring in donations. We figure out sort of like who needs what. You know, sometimes people who have lost everything, they'll come, and different folks from the West Side who are now displaced, who are sort of like, you know, in our area, will come in and we'll talk and we'll ask people what things were like over there, because there's no power, there's no water, they're completely cut off. But there is a story that is going around that I really want to hear more about. And this guy's name is Kimo, oddly enough, which is the name of our lead character in our TV show, Moku Moku. I've heard this said 5 or 6 different times in different locations around. And the story is this. They were stuck. He and I think 4 or 5 of his other friends were stuck over on the West Side during like the height of the fire that broke out. He and his friends found like an earth mover or something to that effect. They hotwired it. They got it off the truck bed that it was on, and they built a firewall. They built 2 firewalls, just these guys. And one power mover, and some of them were just using their hands, I guess. It's just like this complete uplifting kind of like Robin Hood effort where local citizens basically were just like, you know what? We got to do something. And they jump into action. So, man, if I hear about that, I will text you back. And if I can get that guy on your show, you got it, man.
Wow, that is completely extraordinary. I mean, watching what has happened in Hawaii for like the past, you know, week, of course, was definitely horrifying to watch. And as you said, lots of homes are ravaged and lots of people have lost everything. I know that there have been efforts to, you know, get people water and food, of course. What exactly do people need right now? Like, how can the general public help support Hawaii?
I would say there's a great nonprofit that we've partnered with called Maui Rapid Response. And that can be found. They have a Facebook page. If you Google that, you'll actually find their website as well. They've helped us mobilize. They're a very reputable nonprofit. One of the things, I mean, even if you like look back at a lot of the natural disasters that have happened in the United States, the Red Cross does good work. Yet, if a person has lost everything, they don't necessarily want to be red taped to death. One of the things that we've done and that the local community have done is that we have been able to take immediate action, as opposed to the Red Cross. You fill out all these forms, you go through sort of like all these moves for 4 or 5 hours, and then maybe 3 weeks to 4 weeks later you see a result from that. And I understand that it's necessary, but moving forward, what happened here is definitely going to happen elsewhere. Look at the floods that are going on right now. There has to be a way in which the process of taking in the information of who people are who need help and getting that help to happen needs to be quickened somehow. And Maui Rapid Response is doing that. One of the other things that Maui has done is there is a Instagram. There's an Instagram account called, I believe, Lahaina Venmo. And on it, you will find all of the Venmo accounts of those families and those people who have been displaced, and people can donate straight to them. And that money takes instant action. And that's basically what I've been doing. I mean, I'll tell you this very quickly. Have you ever seen that movie? It's a Wonderful Life.
I don't believe it. It may sound familiar. I'm not sure if I've seen it before.
So it's a shame on you. It is a classic Christmas movie. Oh my God. You're like the second person. I'm aging myself. You're young. So, you know, but basically the story is this. There's this guy, George Bailey, you follow him through his entire life, and he always sacrifices himself for his friends, for his father's business, which he takes over and doesn't want. And he's lucky enough to meet the girl of his dreams in a town that he's always tried to get away from, but he's never had the opportunity. Something has always come up where he's just like, I can't do it. I got to stay here. I got to take care of this problem. So an angel comes down on a night where he tries to kill himself. He's going to jump off a bridge. The angel jumps off the bridge and into the water. He sees it. He dives in and saves the angel. And then the guy's just like, yeah, he goes, you know, I'm an angel. I'm here. And you're trying to, you know, kill yourself for this money that you've lost. And anyway, the angel is able to show George what his life would be like if he were not in the town or if he had not been born. And then he runs into people who can see him. I mean, he's not like sort of like, you know, like it's not like a ghost thing from, you know, Christmas Carol or something. Mm-hmm. He confronts people who he's known his whole life, and they're looking at him like, who are you? And, you know, and he sees how everyone changes. He gets to go back to reality. He's joyous. He understands now that what his place sort of in everyone's life would be if he had not been there. But the thing that he was going to kill himself about was there was some money that his uncle lost, and now he's responsible for it, but they don't have it. All of his friends, far and wide, from all over the world, start making these donations. And that's how the story ends. And he, you know, he learns that, I think like the final line is, no man is a failure who doesn't have friends. Mm. Like, if you have friends, you are a success. So why am I telling you this? The second night after I posted that picture, and I left my house, and I was just like, yeah, that's going to be gone. When I went back and saw miraculously that my place was still there, you know, I collapsed from exhaustion. I just went to bed. I woke up and my phone was just, the notifications on my phone were going nuts. And I looked at it and I was getting all of these donations from all over the world. And I mean, you know, I'm a fashion photographer, and I lived in Europe and worked there for quite some time. I was in New York 25, 30 years before I moved here to Hawaii. So I've got a wide network, but people they knew that I lived here. They had seen what had happened, and people started donating to me. So I literally, you know, first I was blown away, but then I was like, wow, you know, I'm like chocolate George Bailey. So what I did, I didn't miss a beat. I got dressed. I got up. I went back to sort of like our donation headquarters, but I stopped at a convenience store. Lady behind the counter had obviously been crying. Her eyes were beet red. I could see that she had dirt kind of like on her pants and stuff like that. So we just sort of, yeah, hey, how's it going? Da, da, da. I'm like, hey, are you okay? And instinctively, she just said yes. But then I looked at her and she said, no. She goes, we lost our house and we tried to fight it as much as we could, but it was terrible. I'm the only one in our family that has a job. My three kids are asleep, sort of like in like this back side room. And, you know, she went on and, you know, it just tears your heart out. Here, this woman's house burned to the ground, yet she came into work that day. Mm-hmm. So I bought my coffee. I started to walk out to my car and I stopped. I turned back around. I went to the ATM machine. I pulled out $100 in cash and I walked over and I was just like, you take this. Mm-hmm. And then I did it again. Like 15 minutes later, I met somebody else at like a different place. I really like coffee. So the people who ran like the convenience stores and were giving me coffee, they hit the jackpot that day. So I did that like five times. And then I was just like, you know what? Target and Walmart are two huge brands here on island. I went there. And by the time I got there, I had like over $750 of people that were just sending me money with messages. Man, I hope you're all right. And, you know, reach out, you know, circle back to me when you can. So I went and I bought a bunch of gift cards. So then I went back to the donation center. And luckily, as luck would have it, there were two different families that were there. And I just started handing out, you know, these gift cards. So I've every single day I've woke up, I've gotten another $1,200 to like $2,000 that's just been sent to me. And that's what I do with it. I try to spend the money as well, you know, as smartly as I can, or give it to people. My friend that I had mentioned, Sarah of Empanada Lady, I'm championing that whole effort as long as I can, you know, by buying the food that she's going to make that then goes. And I'm talking to some friends who have connections in Los Angeles, and I can't say too much about what it is we're going to do, but these guys were responsible for setting up the infrastructure that ran the text donating system for Live Aid years ago. Wow. So we are really going to shoot for the moon on that.
Just an incredible story of resolve and resilience, you know, as the community in Hawaii is just coming together after a completely devastating wildfire that ravaged the state. Mr. Brad Starks, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
This has been a wonderful conversation. I hope I'm invited back. I'll tell you all about the premiere of the show once we get that done.
Very much looking forward to it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Whether you put down your phone to be there for your daughter, or pick up your phone to call a helpline for your roommate, when it comes to mental health, now more than ever, every action counts.
Welcome back once again. That was my interview with acclaimed producer and filmmaker Brad Starks. That interview really did something to me when I recorded it on Wednesday of this week. It was definitely revealing to hear just the resilience and the essentially the community outpour of love and support and appreciation in Hawaii, as he was explaining there. Because before the interview, I was looking on his Instagram and they were passing out water and they were, you know, just getting things from the store. And the fact that his entire production team, this whole crew of Muku Muku, just stopped and said, hey, I know we're filming a season right now, but we're going to put a pause on that to help out the people of Hawaii, to help out those who were deeply impacted, including members, a cast of the show themselves, whose houses were burned to the ground. I mean, just completely devastating story, but a remarkable one of a transition into resilience and to community outpour of love and appreciation. Tonight, I didn't do a big, long, super production as I usually do when I open up the show, like a 20-minute monologue. That is because I wanted to let him tell the story. I wanted to let him tell the story because what has happened in Hawaii, I feel like it's not gotten enough mainstream attention. And I'm doing my best to use my platform here on the Jeremiah Patterson Show to reach people, to tell them this story of what's going on. That is a part of the reason why we're going to have continued special investigative reporting here on the show, just chasing this story, getting more leads, getting more stories, getting more people to come onto the show and tell their stories. Because even though the fires have stopped burning in Maui and Lahaina, the damage has already been done. And the damage does not go away. The recovery efforts are still underway. Many people are still in shelters. Cars are burned. Houses are completely gone. People have lost everything in most cases. It is completely devastating. Please keep Hawaii in your prayers and please do your research on what's happening there. Please watch YouTube videos. I'll leave the link to that interview from that Hawaii News Now reporter that he did with Times Radio in the UK. I'll leave that in the description of this episode. But here on the Jeremiah Patterson Show, we are not giving up on this story. We are going to be covering this for years and years to come because that is the damage that this wildfire did. Once again, special investigative reporting going to be coming up here on the Jeremiah Patterson Show as we continue to follow this story. This was just one of several episodes that will be covering the Hawaii wildfires of 2023. All right, thank you for listening to this episode of the Jeremiah Patterson Show. I really hope you appreciated it. We're also going to be leaving the fundraising and where you can donate. You heard him talk about the Instagram there that had the list of Zelles for people to donate money to as well. I'm going to be leaving all that information in the description of this episode. The Jeremiah Patterson Show also now has a Facebook account, so that'll be on our Facebook. Please get the word out about what's happening in Maui. Please get the word out about what's happening in Lahaina as well. Just get the word out about what's happening. Spread awareness. Stay informed. Do not be misinformed about this. Donate, help, pray, because they do need it right now. And this is a story that needs to continue to be followed and not dissipated from the national headlines, because my goodness. Look at the pictures. Look at the pictures. The fact that people were burned alive in their cars is completely devastating. We're going to be having a special report come out in days ahead about something that I feel like is not really being covered enough. But it is a developing story out of Hawaii. And it partly explains as to why things got so bad and why little action was taken in advance to prevent the worst, especially when it comes to the death toll from transpiring. That is a special report on the Jeremiah Patterson Show that you are not going to want to miss. We are doing our best to pull together exclusive reporting, talking to multiple officials to get this underway. But we are chasing down this story and we are getting answers because the people of Hawaii deserve to have their story told. And you here on the Jeremiah Patterson Show as a listener, you deserve to know what's going on. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Jeremiah Patterson Show. Have a great day. Remember to stay positive and inspired. Please pray for the Hawaiian people right now. And I will see you again tomorrow for another episode.